Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Listen up, you thumb-sucking rugrats. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter-producer for Decider.com. This is part 21 or so of the quarantine era, which means that it's just going to be unfiltered conversation. You're not going to hear any theme songs or any clips from the episode because you know what? Editing sucks and I'm already at my limit in quarantine. So if you think I'm going to spend a lot of time editing episodes, think again. Is that a horrible admission for your host to make? Listen, we're 4 months, 5 months, 6 months into this. You know my mental state at this point. This week, the TV Guide is joined by the TV Guidance Counselor himself, Ken Reed. Hello, Ken.
How's it going?
it's going great. How are you doing? How is your quarantine going?
I often joke that I've been practicing for this for a couple decades. So, not too bad. I have a very comfortable house, but, you know, my mental health isn't great, but because the world is on fire.
Yeah.
But I have been editing more in lockdown.
Yeah. It's this weird, like, for some reason, it makes sense in my head that I'm like, I have so much more time and I don't want to spend it on episodes for some reason. I don't know. I've kind of just like assumed that reader or listeners aren't going to read too much into.
Fair enough.
But I will say, like, the editing of episodes was always a nightmare that kept me from doing it. And so when quarantine happened, I was like, you know what, just getting the episodes done easiest no matter what is the most of utmost importance in these trying times. Mm-hmm. And so I just tried to remove all of the mental barriers to entry that would even stop me from editing at all. So
yeah, fair enough.
Your podcast, talk about your podcast, because it is a sister kin of this. Yes. One, in a way. TV Guide, TV Guidance Counselor. I'm the TV Guide. I'm verging on copyright infringement there. I guess actually TV Guide has the copyright.
That's true.
Are they TV Guide's still around, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they split into three companies. They split into TV Guide Network, TV Guide Channel. TV Guide Channel, TVGuide.com, and the TV Guide Magazine. They're all separate companies now, but the magazine's still around, although I don't know why.
No. Well, isn't also TV Line is that also part of the TV Guide?
They sold that off. Okay. I don't think it's technically
part of
still
CBS
part of
CBS or Viacom or something.
Yeah. It's a weird, there's still Pop TV is TV Guide.
Oh.
So Pop TV used to be the TV Guide channel, which was literally the scrolling. Yeah. And then they started doing original programming that they would have up at the top of the screen. And then eventually they just became an original programming channel and became Pop TV. So they're around.
I love those. When I tell people, they're like, yeah, Spike used to be the Nashville network.
Yeah.
Like that trajectory is just so wild. From the network that gave you Shotgun Red, which is one of my most deep cut Southern references.
Or Dance Club. Do you remember that show they had? Oh my God. Dance Club was an early show on the Nashville network. And it was essentially, if you took MTV's The Grind or Club MTV, but put it in like a country western
line dancing
and just had it be weird old people.
That's what my both of sets of my grandparents would just watch nothing but the Nashville Network when I was with them, because that's where you get the good old gospel singing groups every night.
The old Yeehaws.
Oh, the Gaithers and the Gatlins and the whatevers. But basically, this is what TV Guidance Counselor is. Yeah. It's essentially, tell people about your podcast journey.
So I have more or less every issue of TV Guide magazine. Somebody comes on and they pick an old issue. They go through and they pick what they would watch that week in history. And then we talk about it. We go through night by night. Is at the simplest version of the show, which is just kind of an excuse to talk about whatever in television. And I've done 500 episodes with people I have no business talking to, which is kind of exciting. I've had Ted Danson on, and
Holy
Elvira
shit.
And the band The Damned, and I just did an episode with Jello Biafra. And,
do you also have a talent booker that you're paying very well?
It's
or
just
is
me.
This
it's just
all just
me.
Like sliding yeah. into DM. Or whatever.
Pretty much, or like people I know from stand-up or bands, and like Jane Seymour on.
Oh my god. Yeah,
Bonnie Hunt, who's one of my heroes. I just did episodes with Frank Whaley and Scott Valentine
of
Family Ties. And next week is D.B. Sweeney, Joe Brand. Yeah, there's been some weird ones.
Yeah, dive into the archives and find. Recently you had Dave Holmes on, who friend of the pod. I had him on. We talked about Cheers, the Boys in the Bar last year.
It's a good one.
For sort of my Pride Month, where I do a gay episode, and always have a. It was great to have Dave on. So yeah, I love that episode. Dave Holmes is a perfect kind of guest for that kind of show.
Yeah, Dave is great, and I just did one with Jake Fogelnest as well, who's another friend of Dave's.
Yeah. See, so everyone get into it. Your TV Guide collection is very inspirational. Mine is. I have like 7 or 8.
That's probably more than most normal people need.
I mean, I do have this heart-to-heart one on my coffee table at all times.
I actually have that one like in a stack right here because I was just scanning it for somebody.
Oh, it's a great cover. It's also my iPhone screensaver wallpaper right now as well. That because I'm on a big heart-to-heart kick, as listeners
Murder.
Understand. God, that show is fully wild. Listeners, go back and listen to my heart-to-heart episode where I forced Ethan Kay to watch a whole episode, and then
is it the one with the dog food that's made out of people?
No, I want. I'm doing that one at some point. That one's so good. People like they get drunk off dog food. It's like a hyper addictive dog food that has, and so they all get addicted to it. It's really great. We watched the one. It's a psychic episode from season one that involves both Jennifer going undercover as a psychic and Jonathan going undercover as an old private eye.
Very convincingly.
I love that show. That show is just like rich people wilding out, just going nuts. And I love it.
Vigilante justice, screwing things up left and right with no consequences.
Just great. And just looking gorgeous the entire time. Spared no expense. But this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be traveling to November 6, 1980. Private Benjamin ruled the box office. Woman in Love by Barbara Streisand topped the charts, and ABC aired the It's a Living episode, The Intruder. Ken, you must have seen The Intruder before today.
Absolutely. I've seen every episode of the show. I actually really enjoyed the show in both of its iterations.
Yeah, that is. So like I had, real talk, I don't think I'd ever actually heard of this show until I did the Legendary Gaze of Sitcom History episode about Dick Clare back in June. Co-creator of Mama's Family, It's a Living, The Facts of Life through a very bizarre backdoor, like kind of accidentally co-created The Facts of Life. But in his story is fully wild. His whole, like, he's the reason you can get legally cryogenically frozen in California is because of Dick Clare. Like,
of course.
Good. So that is this. It's a Living is his creation. And it wasn't until I did that episode that I saw, oh no, he also did this other show that ran for, is it 6 seasons total?
Six, but sort of with a gap in the middle.
Like a 3-year gap, like a really long gap. But it is one of those shows similar to, so Mama's Family was also like this. It's a Living was like this. What were the other ones that started out? And went to...
One Day at a Time. Too Close for Comfort was like that. Charles in Charge.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know why my dog's barking. I apologize. Charles in Charge and technically Baywatch as well was like that.
It started on NBC.
Aired on a network for a season, maybe, or It's a Living was technically three seasons on a network. And then went into first run syndication after that. Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to a show like Out of This World, which was always in first run syndication, or like The New Gidget, which was always in first run syndication.
Yeah. No network's going to bid a lot of money on just The New Gidget. They're like, no, that's going to be network by network. It's station by station. No, thank you. So I did not know that this even existed. And so I noticed that it was streaming on, I think, Tubi a couple months ago. And so I was like, sure, I'll watch the first episode. And it was good. And now it's on Amazon Prime Video for honestly who knows how long. Their IMDb TV selections just rotate out very fast and furiously.
There's some good stuff on there, like Spencer for Hire is on there. Like there's some good stuff on IMDb TV. Mean,
my heart to heart origin comes from it being on IMDb TV a couple months ago, and then they took it away and I had to buy the whole series on DVD. Had to.
Well, now you have it forever.
Now I have. Well, wait, what is your relationship with TV on DVD?
So I used to have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to purge most of my DVDs, if not all. And there are a few movies that I need on physical media just in case I, for whatever reason, like I'm going to need these 10 movies. Mm-hmm. There's a few shows that I just will never get rid of. They're either not streaming or I just need them all the time. So like I have the entire series of Kate and Allie on DVD, Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Yep. Yeah.
Parker Lewis Can't Lose, Baywatch Nights season 2.
Wait, where's season 1?
Oh, you don't need season 1. Season 2, the show was retooled.
That's where it goes to X-Files, right? Where it starts getting like werewolves and shit. Yeah.
Misfits of Science, which I have from Germany, and then a couple of British shows. So there's like a few that I just hang on to, but for the most part, you can get almost everything streaming. So I've just for convenience wise I've kept them.
I've started to do that with basically like to fill holes, because like Taxi and Odd Couple are streaming in a bunch of places but only 60% of the episodes.
Yeah. And randomly.
Yeah, and it isn't even like the easy thing of like, well, they have the first three seasons. It's like, no. They have like 10 from season 1, 20 from season 2, and it's very frustrating. Brady Bunch is also like that. I have that.
Barney Miller's like that. Yeah, Barney Miller, I have that box set because season 2 and 3 are streaming but the rest aren't.
So it's very frustrating. But like every time a new streaming service is announced, literally the only thing I care about is what old shows is it going to have.
Same.
So when Peacock launched and it had Munsters, I was holding out because I was like, I need the Munsters. But I was like, it's going to be on Peacock. I don't need to buy it on iTunes just yet. Like I can hold out. But It's a Living is now, but only the first two seasons are on Amazon. So I don't know if there's a weird like rights issue with the syndication version.
There's also on what's the other program? Tubi.
Pluto TV. Does Pluto have it?
Maybe it's Pluto. One of the other ones has seasons 3, 4, and 5.
Oh, okay. Let me find that.
Because I found those recently. It's the one that also has all the seasons of Facts of Life. Oh, man.
Crackle?
No, it's not Crackle.
Crackle's all like weird Sony shit.
I just downloaded it because it has also all the episodes of the Joan Rivers show, the talk show from the 90s.
Oh my God.
So there's one with Little Richard as the guest with Jackie Collins. Like, it's just crazy stuff. And they have all these Geraldo episodes. I'll have to look it up. I downloaded it recently. I forget what it was, but they have It's a Living.
This is more stuff for me to annoy my husband with, for sure. Yeah. Oh my God, that sounds amazing. So I recommend people getting into It's a Living, and you know what? We're probably going to introduce a lot of people to It's a Living through this episode. Although I will say, if you have cable and just have Logo, It's a Living is on rotation on Logo, where they, you know, run shows for 12-hour blocks because that's how cable is nowadays.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have cable for like 10 years. And then when I got it again, I was like, what the fuck has happened to cable?
Oh yeah. It's just marathon things. Yeah.
It's so frustrating. Yeah. Going back to the glory days when it's like, there was an actual schedule of shit and
well, it's narrowcasting now.
Yeah. So now it's just like they're trying to do this like weird, like best of both worlds of like, I don't know. It's annoying to me, but that's because I am an old man.
It's annoying to me too, but I am also an old man. Yeah,
this is, I've come to terms with this, but whatever. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the It's a Living episode, The Intruder. It is the second episode of season 1, and it was written by Wally Dalton and Shelley Zelman, and directed by, at this point, a Must Have Seen TV all-star, Joel Zwick, who I feel like has directed 20 or plus episodes that I've talked about. Here is how Prime Video describes the episode. Despite reports of a cat burglar roaming her neighborhood, Lois invites Jan to stay at her home while her husband and children are away, but those plans take an even bigger turn when Vicky, Cassie, and Dot insists on turning it into a pajama party, of which, of course, is crashed by the cat burglar. Ken, how accurate is that description?
That is a shockingly accurate description, because normally the descriptions don't manage to really capture the subtleties of these things.
Well, and also I would venture into saying that is too much of a description. I think that
it
gets
is. It sort of ruins it. And I do want to mention that the first episode, the pilot, which I won't get too much into because I know it's not the one we looked at, but is really good pilot.
Yeah.
And it manages to be silly but also kind of heavy as well. Like, it has some stuff in it that's like not quite very special episode, but it's sort of real talk, and the relationship between the women is very well done and realistic, and it's sort of a surprise.
Yeah, I think so. I wrote the bigger overarching note for this episode is that how, like, premise of a sitcom doesn't matter. What matters is character and performance. And what is wild to me is that in episode two of the show, they are in the restaurant for maybe 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they just get out.
Yeah. Yeah. So the premise, they all work at a restaurant together at the top of the Bonaventure Hotel in Los Angeles, which I've been to many times.
Oh.
And I've actually stayed in the Bonaventure because of this show. And there's photos somewhere where I'm recreating the opening credits on that bridge.
Oh, man.
Where they walk across and riding in that same elevator. So I've also been to the restaurant. It's a revolving restaurant in real life, and it doesn't look like it does in the show, but it's also... Here's a little tip if you visit Los Angeles, if the world doesn't die. It's a revolving restaurant, and you can go get like a coffee for like $5, and it's the best view of LA. 360 degrees, super high, and it revolves, and it's well worth it.
The restaurant itself, so like this is 1980. So I wrote down that it's kind of like a high class Hooters hotel restaurant. Cause like the waitresses are like supposed to be, you know, there's cleavage going on.
Like, they're wearing like weird like Saint Pauli girl French maid outfits.
Yeah, in the first episode, are they wearing like the red like spandexy tops? Like in the opening credits, they're all wearing like more Hootersy looking things, and in this one, they're like French maidy looking things, and it's all like cheap rayon Party City looking. Like it's not
chokers.
Yeah, it's real weird. So it's a weird vibe. The opening of the show. It has all the hotel, the scenic shots of the women. And like
life's not the French Riviera.
It is the most show toony opening. Like it is just like we are here. We're putting on a show.
Very like Gold Diggers of 1933 Broadway. Yeah,
it's really just getting into it. And there is a weird. This show exists in a kind of a weird bubble between late 70s slapsticky hijinks, you know, your Three's Company sitcoms. And the 80s issue driven, you know, it's an episode of Family Ties, but there are no laughs to be had when you're talking about alcoholism. You know, like,
hey, my name is Alex.
Yeah, it's a living, like, exists in this line, especially like this episode. It's kind of a farce. Like, the characters are big, they're having fun, but it's also like really well acted and patient. So it's got its own unique vibe.
It's an interesting mix of characters. Yeah, this show exists in what I call the beige age, which is about 1978 to 1983, where it was not quite the 80s, even though it technically was, and it was still kind of the 70s. So it has that sort of rattan vibe of some things.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting mix of characters that are sort of cliche, but also not. And the thing that I really like about this is that it's a workplace sitcom, sort of like how Taxi's a workplace sitcom.
Yeah.
In that you have people of all walks of life who are working in a place that is nobody's intended career.
Yeah, they're not happy.
Yeah.
I always remember that. Yeah. I feel like TV Nick at Night would use that one clip from Taxi over and over again in commercials for Taxi, where Alex is like, he's an actor, he's a boxer, he's a whatever. Me, I'm a taxi driver. Because that one line is always stuck in my head. But that's it. That's the show. That's Taxi.
Yeah. It's people doing a thing that it's not what they really do, even though it is.
Yeah. And I really like that. I also noted like this episode is a cast of five women as the waitresses. And they also have like a woman who's the boss who's not in this episode that much. But like even amongst the five waitresses, there is an intergenerational friendship going on. And usually shows with all women casts, they're all the same age. They're all either like in their 20s together, in their 60s together, or it's a mother-daughter thing. Whereas this is more like they span the range of like 20 to like late 30s and you know,
and at different places in their life, like there's two young single girls, one who was a virgin, there's like a late 20s like a feminist horny girl, there's a divorced mom who's going back to school, there's just a married house mother, you know, it's an interesting mix.
It's watching this, it really struck me like, it's hard for me to think of shows where a 21-year-old woman and a 39-year-old woman are coworkers and friends, or like are peers and hanging out. Like that doesn't happen as much.
But I mean, as someone who's worked in restaurants a lot, that's totally accurate.
That's the vibe. And now that the older I get, and I'm like, oh yeah, all of our interns are 23, and then our new employees are also 13, 14 years younger than me, and they are adults in the workforce, and that is. Passage of time is a cruel, cruel thing.
It's weird.
So the very brief restaurant scene we get at the beginning is just kind of like just an normal day in the restaurant. It's almost like they needed to get the other series regulars. They just had to get them some lines because they knew they're not going to sleep over.
Yeah.
So there isn't really that much there. There's a really good. Nancy is the boss, right?
Yeah, she's super bitchy. She's like the B. Arthur kind of character.
She's great. I wrote down that she's a total shade queen. Like she's really good. And she stays with the show the whole run.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Okay. That's the other thing when I was watching this, trying to note like which of the characters that are leaving. And honestly, I'm bummed by the characters that don't come back.
Yeah, I mean, Angelian doesn't come back, I believe.
She is in a little bit of the third season or something. Right, right. So,
But they're replaced with pretty good actors, although it was sad to see Wendy Shaw not come back, who kind of went on to bigger and better things. She's one of Joe Dante's favorite actresses. Yeah. She showed up, and most people know her from The Burbs. She's like the sexy one, but she's in a lot of Joe Dante stuff. And she's really funny, but is also kind of a superfluous character because they sort of have two dumb, innocent characters.
Yeah. When I was trying to write down, I was trying to keep all the characters straight. And so I wrote down like, so, okay. Gail Edwards plays Dot, who listeners will recognize her as Vicky from Full House.
Yes.
Danny Tanner's long-term girlfriend. Her character I wrote down is more young. She's like the young one.
And she's like Midwestern.
Yes. And then there's Jan, who's played by Barry Youngfellow, who this is the only thing she ever really did from what I saw on IMDb.
She's a stage actor, really.
Okay. So she was not being recorded. She was.
Right.
And I wrote down that she is more like earthy. Like she's like just really salt of the earth.
Like, she's the single mother who's like going back to school and, you know, just waiting tables to kind of like better herself.
And then there's Cassie, who's played by Angelian, who was a child actress. She started on Hazel, did like episodes like Leave It to Beaver and stuff.
Oh, yeah. She's from Cambridge, Massachusetts. She's from Boston. Yeah. She was a big song and dance person as well. Was in a ton of the Bob Hope specials.
Oh, wow.
People might know her from Mr. Mom. She was also in a one of the best worst sitcoms of all time. Jennifer Slept Here.
Yeah. I read about that. A gender flipped Ghost of Mrs. Muir. Okay, cool.
She also is one of the few people to have written and starred in a TV movie about herself.
Yeah. And she won a Golden Globe for it. I saw because she like was diagnosed with breast cancer in the 80s and like became a very serious cancer advocate, which I guess is also like after It's a Living, like kind of in between those. So, you know, she was doing good things. And she plays Cassie, who's like basically the sassy, snarkier Blanche Devereaux is kind of the vibe. Like she's like a younger, fiercer, like feisty.
Mixed a little bit with Jill Polnicek. Like she has like a kind of a street vibe. Like she'll kick your ass. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. She's a tough dame. And then we have the two that don't stick out through the rest of the series, which are, Susan Sullivan plays Lois, and Susan Sullivan is the only person in this cast who is still doing regular, like on television work today. She's an icon. She is the Jessica Walter before Jessica Walter did Arrested Development. Like, her on Dharma and Greg, she plays Greg's mother, and I love that performance.
She was on Falcon Crest, I think. She did a lot of, and she's beautiful. Like, she's a stunning, like, middle-aged woman.
She's just, like, and I wrote on classy. Like, her word that I had was just, like, she's classy. Like, she's just great. And she's most recently on the Kominsky Method, so she's still, like, out there doing shit.
Yeah, and her not quite her character, but the slot her character was in was replaced by Linda Lavin.
Okay.
Which is a little bit on the nose.
Yeah.
You have an Alice be in the restaurant show.
Yeah, geez, she getting typecast there.
Yeah.
And then lastly is Wendy Shaw, who played Vicky, who was the other young Perky is what I said she was more. She was more perky and Dot was more innocent. I don't like, they're very similar.
Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, they sort of split Chrissy from Three's Company into two people.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And so she's become more of a voice actress as well. Like you mentioned all the Joe Dante movies, and she also does the voices on like American Dad and is still doing mm-hmm. that today. So like,
yeah, she's very funny.
Working. She's working. So yeah, the intro scene basically sets up like, you know, it's episode two. We got to remind everyone they work in a restaurant. You're not going to see the restaurant much in this episode, but trust me, it's still there. Oh. Object permanence viewers. Come on. And Lois is basically like, my husband and her husband and kids are out of town. She's kind of nervous because there's been
they
a
went
lot of
camping.
There's a lot of burglars and stuff in the neighborhood. And does Jan offer to come over or does she?
It's
ask?
Already established.
It's already
that
established
Jan
she's
is
doing
already,
it.
Yeah, yeah, that Jan's coming over, which is a pretty common thing. Like, yeah. Oh, come on, you know, because they're of the same age. Like, yeah. They're the two that are like kind of peers. And also contextually, this is a show that is oddly specifically set in Los Angeles, which a lot of sitcoms weren't, even if they were shot there, but they're like, we're telling you this is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it was shot at the time when the Night Stalker was happening.
Holy shit.
And a lot of the weird late 70s, early 80s LA sort of home invasion serial killer stuff was happening. So it's
great
it's
for sitcoms.
Yeah, it's a little bit ripped for the headlines. There's also a Punky Brewster about the Night Stalker, which is weird, but even though that's Chicago. But yeah, so it was. It has that kind of weird, a little bit of a weird air about it for that.
Yeah, and as soon as Dot and, I'm already just going to keep looking at my notes, Dot and Vicky find out, they're like, sleepover, slumber party, let's get into it. Lois says, like, we spend a third of our lives together, and then one of them says, like, but not in pajamas.
That's right.
Which, at this point, I was just like, a sleepover sounds real fucking fun right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, more than one person who doesn't live in your house.
Oh, my God, I'm even just like, I wish if my husband didn't have such a bad back, I'd be like, let's just like set up a fort in my office and like watch the old television.
Sleep bags. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just to do anything to break the hell monotony that we're all in. Yep. Heyo. And then they basically like agree to it pretty quickly. Like there isn't a lot of like negotiating back and forth. It's established they're coming over. They then immediately invite Cassie, who's like, I actually have a date, but
yeah, why would I do that?
Why would I go there? And then we are immediately in the sleepover scene. Like it's act one, scene two. Let's just go. Let's get it going. And then it's a bottle episode.
Yeah.
They never leave that bedroom, which I did know. I understand, I guess, budget wise, why they did not build a separate living room and bedroom set. Because it is kind of weird that at the sleepover, they're all just hanging out in her bedroom the entire
night.
It's a
set they only use that one episode.
Yeah. So yeah, there's no... They save some money in this one.
Yeah.
For the big special effects extravaganza that I'm sure is episode three.
And they save some money by using the same exact pattern on the wall and all of the furniture in the room.
We just got a whole lot of this fabric.
This yellow flower fabric. Just put it on everything.
Literally everything. It's not a lot of interior designers working on this set of bits of living. I really like that Dot says, like, basically, like, they are wanting to do all the sleepover things. She goes to Lois. She's like, I just really want to redo your hair. You would look so good with the pigtails just sticking out the side of your head. And then Lois said something like,
she goes, I've lived my life in a manner to never have anything sticking out of my head.
Which is really good. But like, what I love, and I talked about this a lot in, well, literally every episode, but in the Cheers episode from last week, there is a manner with which performers can deliver jokes where they feel natural and earned. And like the way Susan Sullivan delivers that line, it's not the kind that you would see on like a modern Netflix multicam show. It'd be like, I've tried to live my entire life without having anything sticking out of my head. You know?
Yeah, it's very downplayed.
Yeah. And that is how you do this. Like, that's how you do a multicam sitcom, is you get like actual actors that want to be in the character. And like, for episode two, all these people seem to really know who they are.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they in the pilot, they're like that.
Yeah.
It's very strong cast of, I mean, the actors, they're all very strong. Like, they're good actors. Like, a lot of them are stage actors.
Yeah.
And they have very specific personas, and they, it feels like a show that's been on for a couple seasons already.
I know, this is a really strong episode for being an episode two. Like, it's really, yeah, really strong. There's a really funny moment where Dot, like, goes to use the bathroom, and then she comes back in and she's like, I just saw him on the roof or something.
Then
like Lois goes and she says something like, it was a tree. And then Vicky's first response was, did it have a gun?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's, I really do think the writing in this episode and in the pilot and this whole season is pretty on par with something like Golden Girls.
Yeah. Well, they have a producer in common because Bal Younger-Witt was producer on both shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that I keep seeing that name every time I watch every show I watch. I don't know, so.
and it's, although there are male characters, to your point, there's Paul Kripal plays the piano player. He's not really in this episode, but he's pretty much a regular, and the chef is a regular in the show, but it's mostly an all female cast. And I can't think of a sitcom before this that had this large of an all female cast or this portion of females in the cast.
No. I mean, like, Mary Tyler Moore mostly had parody the entire time. Like, it was like 3 and 3 usually.
Yeah.
I think there were like season 4, there was a period where it was like Betty White, Cloris Leachman, Valerie Harper. Like, if they did for like a hot second have like all the powerhouses. But like, yeah, it is unlike a lot of shows of that era. And like, that's why Golden Girls was so revolutionary. And that's also why they were annoyed at Designing Women. Even though Designing Women is nothing like Golden Girls.
To be honest, I prefer Designing Women.
Oh, okay. We'll fight. We'll fight over this.
Just saying. I love Delta Burke and Annie Potts and Jean Smart. Come on.
But which is really better, Women of the House or Golden Palace?
They're real bad. They're both real bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I might give it to Golden Palace just because of Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle's in that. But then Jonathan Banks is in Women of the House playing developmentally slow individual.
But very well.
God, it's such a... Women of the House is streaming on Prime Video. People out there want to watch it.
It is. Yeah, as is Hearts of Fire, the follow-up series.
Yeah, there's a lot of very weird 2-3 season wonder shows. Like, Love and War is on, Tubi or something.
But none of the ones I want.
No.
Like, I want just the 10 of us. I want Parker Lewis. You know, I want some of the obscure Fox stuff. No.
I want Boston Common.
God, that's bad.
If you would just give me a, like, all must-see TV B-sides network streaming service.
The 930 spot.
Of just, like, Veronica's Closet, Union Square.
Single
like that,
guy.
That would just rock my world. I would love it.
Caroline in the City,
which is on CBS All Access.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good. It's a fine show. It's fine. I swear it probably is. They gave Bill Daly work late in his life, so
yeah.
I will.
Ileana Douglas is good on The Single Guy.
Yeah. You know, every show's got blessings and curses. This is when they then hear that there's someone downstairs. They all go to bed.
Yeah,
at this point,
in separate
like,
rooms.
Yeah, they all go to the separate rooms. We don't see the separate rooms.
Oh, did we mention Angelian shows up?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Angelian pops in because her date went horribly.
Yeah, she's like, Adam dropped me off here because there's 20 more minutes to my house. And I was like, nope.
Yeah. And she pops in right after Dot is telling a story about like a slumber party that she heard about when she was a kid.
Where everybody got murdered.
Where everybody got murdered. And then Angelian just walks in. Cassie walks in. They all scream.
We're in a pretty exciting pantsuit.
Oh, yeah, it's really
like
good.
A jump, like a romper.
Yeah, it's a good, like, good romper action. Also, her hair is very, like,
Dorothy Hamill.
I was going to say, was it Cherie from The Runaways? Like, the lead singer of The Runaways?
Oh, yeah, it's a little Cherie-ish.
Like, that kind of, like, shag blonde thing going on. So when they all decide to go to bed, they then hear someone downstairs. And they all start, like, of course, having the panic. They all run into the room again. They're like, who's going to go downstairs and check?
And I will say, as someone who's watched a lot of sitcoms, they play with your expectations here because normally you would expect it to be a misunderstanding. So you would expect it to be the cat or her husband comes home early.
Yeah.
Both of which are things the other characters suggest.
Yeah. it's just your husband. He actually came home. He's just down there, like, making a sandwich. And then when Cassie comes back up and they're like, so what? It was her husband, right? And she's like, does he wear a ski mask?
Yeah.
Which is really good. Like, that on it, that honestly, at that point, we know we're in uncharted territory as far as sitcoms go.
That's a nice curveball.
Yeah. Usually the we have to go down and check comes at the very end of the episode so that the reveal can be it was the mom all along. Or like,
yeah,
you
after
know,
they like tie him up and put a bucket on his head. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is like, no, there is actual menace and danger afoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wrote at this point that Cassie is good. I don't know what really made me write that, but it's like her performance, the way that she delivers all of her like withering remarks, it's really solid.
The thing that's great about her is she does them in a way that's not like, look at the camera, say the line. Yeah. It's very natural, mm-hmm. which is really hard to do with that like sarcastic, you know, above it all character.
Yeah. And again, I will always harp on this, like, just hire better actors for the current multicam sitcoms. Jeez, yeah.
Well, they don't need to because people love it regardless of how garbage it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, these kids don't have discerning taste. And here I am watching every episode of Mr. Iglesias for some reason. I watched all of No Good Nick.
I mean, Angelian would have been great on all of those.
Yes, Angelian should have been Nick on No Good Nick. She could play a 14-year-old in the year 2019.
She could have played all the parts on Mom.
Yeah. So this is when there's this really good, like, they're all like, who took any self-defense classes, et cetera, et cetera. And then is it Cassie that says, like, all you have to do is just kick them in their place of business. And that's when Vicky screams, but they can't get a job. That's why they rob people. Yeah. Which,
funny joke.
Really fun. That's a really fucking good joke.
And Cassie's also playing it like in a, her character doesn't change. Normally they would be like, oh, now the tough girl's like terrified and all girly. Oh. But she's still kind of like, yeah, whatever. Kick his ass.
Like, yeah, just kick his ass. She's honestly just like, I want to go to bed. I'm going to bed alone tonight, which is not what I had in mind. This sucks, but like, just fucking get this over with, people. Yeah. Like, it's really great. And also, I will say, it is also hard for people to play that level of detached and not, and still be engaged in the scene.
And not take you out of the show.
Yeah. Because she's great.
And you believe that she's friends with them too, which normally that character, you're like, why is this person even hanging around with them? She hates them. But it doesn't come across like that.
Yeah, they all have such a really good ease. They all feel really like coworkers, which, you know, they also were coworkers in real life because they're on a job about a job.
But for two weeks.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And then only like a couple weeks more because this show didn't last long on
13 episodes. The network. 13 episodes of first season, and then the second and third season were longer. And then it went into the syndication.
But, you know, better days. Looking back at the 80s, just like, just take me back.
There's a weird thing, too, where the second season was called Making a Living.
Yeah, what the hell? Like, why? Why would you do...
Because there was a writer's strike that was, there was an impending writer's strike and they were trying to pull a fast one where you can technically have it be a new show if it has a different title. And then you don't have to, the writers you had can't, it's like a weird loophole they were going for.
Oh, wow. That is truly, because and then when it comes back to syndication, like, yes, it's a living. Sorry for tricking y'all at one point.
Yeah.
So then they realize he's coming upstairs. So they hear him. Yeah. He's on the way. And then they go from a plan of like, just put the comforter up against the door, like try to barricade it or whatever, I guess is the plan was.
Make it quiet so he doesn't know we're in here.
And then they immediately jump to hide, just hide, just go. Yeah. And they all scatter, except Susan Sullivan Lois grabs like a book, like a big thick tome, turns off the light, gets behind the door, clocks him on the head as soon as he walks in. He's pop. And then they all jump on him. And then these are the kind of scenes that I feel like as actors have to be so much fun to play. Just everyone just dogpile on this one person and just freak out like your kids. It's great.
Yeah, and shove them in the closet.
Yeah, they shove them in the closet. They realize this door actually locks. And it's rare that a sitcom gets a fight scene. Sitcom fight scenes, I'm thinking of the Step by Step episode where Sasha Mitchell just wanted to use more kickboxing skills inexplicably. Yep.
I'm also thinking of the second part of the Punky Brewster Fenster Hall series where TK Carter has a knife fight with James LaGrosse. as a character called Blade. TK Carter utters the phrase, "You could take the money, but you can't take TC," who's one of the kids, and he wraps a bandana around his hand, and they're having a whole knife fight, like, and Beat It.
Oh, my God. Just fully wild.
Yeah.
Well, also, like, Family Matters would get into, like, because they had the cop angle, they would get into some serious, this episode, we're taking on a local gang that just trashed Rachel's restaurant, and Urkel's going to go undercover in a sting operation. And it's like, this show started as a lovely family sitcom between an elevator operator and her cop husband.
And now there's time travel and cloning.
And geez, that show is, the first Family Matters episode I did with the podcast was the series finale, which is where Urkel goes to space.
Yeah.
God, that show went off.
That's why you don't let a side character take over a show.
No.
It always ruins the show. I can't think of one scenario where it made the show better.
No, I can't.
And they're great characters, and a little goes a long way.
A little goes a long way. Yeah. You don't want
JJ on Good Times, Urkel.
I mean,
Lotka
didn't really do that, although they did let Andy Kaufman just do whatever he wanted towards the end.
And those are the weakest episodes.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, this week he's like a cowboy. Cool. Sure.
Yeah.
They get him in the closet, locked him up, and he starts like pleading in a really like, he's, what is it? Like, I got 400 kids at home.
Yeah.
It's like, he's not even trying, really. He's using all the lamest excuses. The cops come. Cassie ends up, like, hitting on one of the cops.
Yeah, which is keeping in character.
She's like, I'll walk you to the door. And they're like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Julian.
They all pile into bed.
Yeah.
Say they're good. One bed, because they're all scared.
Yep.
It's a good thing she has that king bed.
That's right. Which I wonder how much of that was like a little something for the dads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. So in doing research for this episode, I did find an article from, so this is episode 2. So all the articles about it from November 80 are all about it being a new show. And one of the things I saw was about ABC's new plan with sitcoms is like filth sex coms or smut coms.
Yeah,
because of this, and also like I think Three's Company was still going on at the time, or like they were really trying to lean into it. And it's so wild to me that just like this is just a show about mostly single women.
It happened to be women. Yeah, yeah, like even like, their pajamas in this are very, very, very conservative.
Oh God, no! Like, there are gowns. There is an oversized T-shirt. Like no one. It's like it's not a naughty 90s runway special or nothing.
No.
So it's weird that this show at the time, and I guess. So I guess what the restaurant they work at is more, do their uniforms at the restaurant stay that peculiar?
They get bustier. Like actually, no lie. Once they go into syndication, they add chokers and they all have huge cleave.
Oh my,
they really sex it up on the later episodes. Like Crystal Bernard looks really uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. That is the wild. Yeah. I forgot that Crystal Bernard, this was her pre-Wings jam.
Post the Master.
Yeah, pre-Wings.
Somewhere over there, I have Crystal Bernard's Christian album signed to me.
Oh my God.
It's real bad.
I could imagine. I've still not done Wings on this podcast, but this is the second week in a row that I've talked around Wings. So Wings
heads. I love Wings. I love Wings.
We'll get into it. I just love Wings' reputation amongst other NBC execs at the time. And that Top of the Rock oral history book where they all just, the running theme was just shitting on Wings.
But it's great. It's like I've had Steven Weber on and Steven's so funny.
Yeah.
And David, what's his name? The guy who
Schramm?
Who just died of COVID this year. David Schramm is so hilarious. It's such a weird sitcom character that you would never get on any sitcom.
Yeah.
And it's a weird mix. Even Crystal Bernard's great on it.
Oh yeah.
Amy Yazbeck
is great. It's a really good show. I mean, it has Superman on it. Tim Daly's on that show. Like, voice of Superman. But yeah, so like that is basically the end of the episode. Cassie comes back in and she's like, I'm just going to sleep on the chair.
Yeah.
Which that's a pain.
Oh yeah. I mean, when I was in bands, people did that. I actually have a bit on one of my albums about a friend of mine, a comic who was showing us around his apartment and there's no bed in his bedroom.
Oh.
And I was like, where's your bed? And he goes, oh, it's okay, I sleep in a chair. And like a bit, I'm like, no, that you should never say it's okay followed by I sleep in a chair. Like that's not a normal thing. You never sleep in a chair like willingly.
No.
Which shows that Angelina's character like wants to be in the same room with them.
Yeah.
But keeping her distance.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to give you an inch. You're not going to get a mile yet.
Yeah.
But maybe in a couple weeks after we know each other a little more. Yeah. So are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode?
I am.
Boom, boom.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So this episode of TV was not in, the show itself was not in the top 30 for its overall season, but it was 26th the week this episode aired. So it rated 26th out of like four, I think there was like 45 shows that aired.
Which is decent. It must have had like a pretty good lead in.
Yeah, it the write-up of it was, and a solid start for It's a Living with 26 for the week. The top five shows this week were, number five was Alice. Number four was the Friday at 8 p.m. episode of Dallas. Number three was the Jeffersons. Number two was the Friday at 9 p.m. episode of Dallas. And number one was the Sunday episode of Dallas.
Yeah, this is the height. This is, we're talking
this
Who
is
Shot JR.
Literally
era.
Who Shot JR. Like, this is literally, they are coming back from the summer of Who Shot JR. So
one of the biggest TV stunts ever.
I also like, so dramas do not hold a place in my heart because Nick at Night didn't rerun dramas.
Right.
Wait, was White Shadow a drama?
White Shadow was a drama.
So yeah.
Well, it was sort of a dramedy. It was along the lines of like James at 15.
Okay, but was it an hour or a half hour?
It was an hour.
Okay, yeah. So I never fucked with White Shadow growing up.
Nick at Night did Love Boat, which had dramatic elements. They did. And I think for a short time, I feel like they did Falcon Crest.
I feel like once my Nick at Night days ended in the late 90s. They might have gone more into like actually showing, like even TV Land didn't. Well, TV Land got into the Westerns, which I would always turn on the TV in the morning and be like, oh, it's the Westerns. Just get on to Green Acres and Petticoat Junction, please.
Like, the best thing they ever did. And then like after this, I think it was Nick at Night, not TV Land, was one of them. I believe it was New Year's Eve 1999. And they did on New Year's Eve a marathon of all last episodes.
Oh.
And then on New Year's Day, all first episodes.
That's great.
And it was great. And then it started to kind of go downhill after that.
Yeah. Well, once shows that I remember watching growing up go on Nick at Night, then I'm like, this is sad. But also, hey, it's a passage of time. But like, because that, I've never watched Dallas. I've never watched, like, those shows did not get rerun, I guess, because they're also an hour, so they take up twice as much of the schedule. Yeah. So like, you know,
they're expensive to run in syndication.
Well, and also Dallas was still running well into my childhood. Like, that show
into
ran
the 90s.
91 90s, like it ran, so
yeah.
So it wasn't gonna pop up there anytime soon. So yeah, I've never gotten into those, even though you can stream, I think, Knott's Landing and I think you can
Dallas.
Yeah, I think you can stream them on Prime or IMDb or
yeah. And I mean, Dallas something. Had that continuation reboot a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so I should, you know, I'm watching all this Genie stuff. I should also watch Larry Hagman's other role, the role that he actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
What a man. Yeah, so like Heart to Heart is my first foray into vintage dramas, which you have to say drama very loosely.
Yeah, that is a very loose drama. A drama like Knight Rider's a drama.
Yeah. Oh, God. It makes me just cackle so much. It's just the most ridiculous show in the world. But yeah, I would kind of like to watch the whole Who Shot JR I do respect the show coming back and then not even answering it until episode 4 of the season.
Yeah. And then undoing it all 2 seasons later.
Yeah, right. The Patrick Duffy thing, the yeah. shower moment.
It's all a dream.
Well, how many seasons were a dream? Like two?
Like the first, like seasons 2 through 6 or something. Jesus crazy Christ, like that.
You can't do that.
It's not St. Elsewhere bad, but it's pretty bad.
You know, St. Elsewhere just completely just like dropped a nuclear bomb into all of pop culture.
Yeah. Just like Roseanne, just like the Roseanne finale.
So when Roseanne came back, I had to, for work, actually try to untangle all of that. And it just got down to the point of it. Like, and I'm a comic book person. Like, yeah. I can explain Psylocke and Cable's origins back in my head.
That's like Crisis times 10.
But you get to like Roseanne's continuity, especially when you factor in the reboot, where it's like they're pretending that didn't happen. But also Jackie now doesn't have a son for some reason, even though that kid was born midway through the run. Yeah. Also, Darlene's kids are like way younger than they should be. It's just like nothing. There's no reality anymore, man. I hate that shit. The ABC Thursday lineup that this aired as part of was pretty iconic. I don't know. Mork and Mindy, followed by Bosom Buddies, which also debuted this year.
And was only 2 seasons.
Yeah. Barney Miller, It's a Living, and then 2020. I'm going to say Barney Miller is the odd man out in this lineup.
Yeah, and they were the oldest show in that lineup. Yeah. They were, you know, started in 74, I think. Barney Miller's a show that I have on physical media as well, because it's, I love it. But yeah, that show, like, this lineup is more akin to Tuesday nights, like Three's Company, Three's a Crowd,
yeah,
that kind of thing, rather than the Thursday. But, you know, pretty solid.
I mean, I would tune into that entire night. It's also when I realized that the Brady Bunch and the Odd Couple were in the same ABC lineup. And there's like, I cannot think of 2 shows that are more on the opposite end of the entertainment spectrum than The Odd Couple and The Brady Bunch. But like, sure, just throw them together.
They hadn't really figured out how to program nights yet.
No,
in a way that was all, you know, we're appealing to the same people, which if you think about it, makes sense, because they're like, we don't want the same people all night. We want to pull in a larger group of people. So, you know, we're going to try and appeal to a bunch of different kinds of people.
Yeah. And I think like even things with like, so like the kids are awake and they're watching Mork and Mindy, then maybe the younger kids are then going to bed by the time Barney Miller and It's a Living come on is also maybe the kind of vibe that we're, especially if you're not living in Central Time where that shit's on earlier, if you're living in Eastern or Pacific. But also, so this also debuted, so Bosom Buddies and Mork and Mindy didn't come back until like a week after It's a Living, this specific episode aired. It was actually like some specials and stuff beforehand, so I didn't get into those. So I don't know, this episode actually didn't have a solid lead in, I guess, but it still did well in the ratings. On IMDb, 21 It's a Living fans rated this episode an 8.1. Do you agree with that? Should it be higher, lower, right on the money for
It's a Living? That's right on the money, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm going to give it an 8.1. And also, let's get some more voters for It's a Living, people. Get on there.
I mean, you could handicap it a little bit for being so early in the series and get it a little higher, because again, I'm so impressed with how fully formed this show is.
Yeah.
Normally a show, even like a beloved show, the first few episodes, you're like, the characters don't feel quite like we remember them, or they're kind of changed, you know. This is like just solid.
Yeah, and it is even more interesting knowing that like half of the cast isn't going to be there in a little while either.
Right.
It's also like, bummed.
That's kind of keeping with a restaurant.
Yeah, that is true. They shouldn't be there for 6 years. They should be there for a year max. Who had the must-see performance of this episode?
Aunt Jillian.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. She's great.
Yeah. And she's awesome.
It also shows that like, of all of them, well, so her and Susan Sullivan had the most, I think, extensive acting, TV acting credits before this show, because Susan Sullivan did like A World Apart and Another World. Like she was doing soap operas, I guess, before this.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows. It shows that Angelian, and also Angelian gets like a, she gets an and Angelian as Cassie. Like she gets that. Yeah. People know they're showing up for her.
People knew her from those Bob Newhart specials. Like she was huge in those.
Yeah.
And she was also one of the last, she was sort of a dying breed of like the, I do drama. I also sing and dance and do cabaret shows and like just the whole thing.
Linda Carter
thing, you know,
more of that. I want shows where everyone's got to sing and dance as well.
We have like Maya Rudolph. I think that's the only person we have now.
Genius. Must other people see this episode of television?
I think so. I mean, it's not like a, I would not be like, you haven't seen It's Not, Living.
It's not like Chuckles Bites the Dust or nothing.
But yeah,
like,
but I mean, if you're looking for some comfort food TV in lockdown and something easy to watch that's good and you haven't seen it, it's streaming, it's free. There's no real reason not to.
I say, yeah, you know, everyone hop onto that IMDb, Amazon Prime Video via IMDb TV.
But that's right.
It's a confusing thing.
But you can also access IMDb TV on like your Samsung TV or Apple TV, I think. That's its own app.
Sorry, I'm going to do a special thing that I haven't done in a while. So every now and then I pull out the Great TV Sitcom Book by Rick Mitz to talk about a show that only lasted one season, which is a show that we will probably never do on this podcast because it only lasted one season. Pick a year between, I don't know, 1961 and 1979?
77.
Oh, I just realized that I usually edit out the part where I search for the listing, but... So, do you want to hear about Baby I'm Back, Carter Country, Free Country, or Joe and Valerie?
Joe and Valerie is the only one I haven't heard of. So let's do that.
So, Joe and Valerie, after Saturday Night Fever became such a big movie hit, TV took the hint and started its own disco sitcom, Joe and Valerie, which did not have John Travolta. That was another show. Welcome back, Carter. But instead starred Paul Regina and Char Fontaine as two kids who fall in love at New York City disco. They were clearly in love, but they clearly had problems, mainly because of their nutty friends. Joe shared an apartment with the macho Frankie Berganski, Bill Byers, and simple-minded Polly Barone, David Elliott. Valerie lived at home with her divorced mom Stella, Pat Benson, and had a man-hungry friend Thelma Medina, Donna Pontarotto. Then, by day, Joe worked at his father Vincent's plumbing store, Travolta worked in a hardware store, and Valerie was a clerk at a cosmetics counter. At night, they both went out dancing. So apparently did the viewers. NBC canceled this show after only a few episodes. Joe and Valerie.
I wonder if that's the same year that I think it was ABC had Making It, the other Saturday Night Fever disco show that starred David Naughton.
Oh, man. Disco just took over. I think that Joe and Valerie suffered by not having disco in the title.
Yeah, it should be called Disco Joe and Disco Valerie.
Yeah, like, if that's what you're building the show around, you say Joe and Valerie, and I'm like, are you talking about Joe and Rhoda? What's going on here? Like, that's where my mind goes.
Like, call the show Disco Joe. Everyone's going to watch it.
Yes, exactly. Oh, poor that show. Do you have any favorite one-season wonder sitcoms?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, it's all your jams.
I Married Dora is up there.
Oh, what is that one?
I Married Dora starred Elizabeth Pena, and it was ABC 1987. And the concept of the show, and Juliette Lewis, it was one of her first roles. Concept of the show was widowed architect with two kids, marries his housekeeper so she can stay in the country. And Elizabeth Pena is really funny in it. And then they slowly kind of fall in love over the series. But it had one of the greatest series finales ever. And so they knew the show was getting canceled, so they were able to write the finale.
Oh,
so what happens is, you know, you have the will they, won't they, will they actually love each other kind of thing. So end of the last episode, Elizabeth Pena decides she really does love him. And he's flying away on business, and she wants to tell him before he goes away. So she rushes to the airport. When she gets to the airport, he's standing there with his bags. And she goes, what happened? I thought your flight took off. And he goes, no, it was canceled. She goes, your flight got canceled? And he goes, no, our show got canceled. And then they pull back the camera and you see the crew and the audience and then just cut to black.
That's brilliant.
It was insane. Like, as a kid, I was like, what did I just see? What just happened?
Oh, my God. I also give me a streaming service that's all shows that only lasted one season.
Yeah, totally. New Adventures of Beans Baxter is another one.
I would live for this.
Which was Savage Steve Holland, who did One Crazy Summer and Better Off Dead. He did a show about a teenage spy. And it's really weird. There's some great stuff.
I'm very into... Well, I've only watched... So, Mary and I'm Dickensy's Finster are my two John Astin ones that I've done on this podcast. Because Mary was a good show for the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Michael Keaton's great in it.
And then... And then I'm Dickens, He's Spencer is John's pre-Addams Family one that we did on the show, and we're surprised at how really funny it was. Because when you're doing one of those like early 60s sitcoms, it's like, this could be rough.
Yeah, if it's not Car 54, you're like, it's going to be bad.
It's gonna, but it was like, oh, it was like legit. But it's also from, oh, God, the guy that did Get Smart. It was a show he did before Get Smart. So, yeah. So, like, of course. But only half of the first season's on DVD. So, lost to the sands of time. Yeah, I guess, I mean, hey, I guess that's it. Where can people find you and all of your hot content?
I'll give them my home address. No, it's I'm at tvguidancecounselor.com or I can read R-E-I-D, the letter I, K-E-N-R-E-I-D.com. And then on social media, Kenneth W. Reed or at TV Guidance. It's all that stuff. New episode every week. Yeah.
Yeah. And you got big guests coming, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. The Scott Valentine one is particularly good. There's some good stories in there. Yeah. Because he doesn't do a lot of interviews. People thought he was dead. He actually says that. There's a story in there about Harvey Weinstein getting knocked out.
Hey, subscribe now, people. And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest Ken Reed for dropping by and talking about It's a Living with me. Next time I'll be discussing something I don't know what yet. You know what, I'm rolling with it, I'm figuring it out. But you know what, I do know what the 100th episode is going to be, and y'all are just gonna have to wait.
Oh, will you tell me off mic?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. If you like what you've heard, rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts because it helps out. And read the words that are right at Decider.com. I can't think of anything super relevant that I've done lately, but go click on things. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to you all for listening. And I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.